Blog Talk Radio.
It's that time. We have the people.
This is Eric from Number One.
This is Priscilla Lima.
This is Tim Jensen with Pepperdine Volleyball.
The story in real time.
I can't argue that we're the best team in the world.
I'm not retiring, people.
You're listening to The Net Live with Barney.
If everyone was doing a great job, then everyone would win the championship every week.
Peter.
It's not kittens and candles all the time, guys.
Reed.
Where's Pretty? You promised me he'd be on the show today.
And DJ Rouché.
The baddest DJ in the land.
It's The Net Live right now.
It is The Net Live right now, and it's actually happening. Peter, nice shirt.
Thanks, buddy.
Welcome, everybody, to The Net Live. Supposed to be back on Monday, but all of a sudden we're back. Monday, the gremlins. You know, Geeter, it's Christmas time. I gave you the Mogli, and I said, Geeter, don't get it wet. You know, it'll multiply, then you'll have a problem, and I think you got it wet, and I think you fed it after midnight, and then you couldn't get on the show.
Mind if I discuss Monday for a moment?
Yeah, have at it, because we owe an apology to every one of our fans that tuned in. They were excited. They were going to hear from Diane Turnham from the NCAA Selection Committee. We were going to get her on. There's going to be some coaches. There's going to be all kinds of good stuff. We're going to have Jeremy and good music, and something happened.
There are times in life and in sport where you get crushed and you throw the game away, and other times you learn from it. I'm throwing Monday away. There was a lot of prep time that went into that show. I had to work all weekend, so we stayed up nice and late. Jeremy and I got up nice and early. We got to your house. You weren't even here. We got things ready to go, and Jeremy followed your instructions, and it didn't work. I was on my way to pick up my daughter for her fourth birthday because I missed her birthday on Saturday. Then her real birthday was Monday, but we had a party on Saturday because I had to work the SC-UCLA game, football. And on my way, I get a call that Rick Neuheisel gets fired. I had to turn around, drive to UCLA, reshoot the Neuheisel show that we'd shot the day before, then go straight out to the sports arena for UCLA basketball. Never saw Millie on her birthday. That was devastating. So not only did we not get on the air, which we were prepared to do, had worked hard to do. You know, we had Diane coming on. We had Mick coming on. You weren't there, so I had to carry the load.
Yeah.
Very nerve-wracking without the glue here.
It was going to be a great show.
Yeah, we were going to go off topic the whole time. But then, it was just a bad day. So I'm throwing that day away. I am glad, however, that we are going to do this show today because for 1 week, every single year, you can discuss the brackets in March Madness and hoops and women's volleyball because there's always problems. There's always controversies. There's always things you're not going to agree with. This is the 1 week to do it because after this weekend, nobody cares anymore. You're to the Sweet 16 and we've moved on.
It's going to be a great weekend. In spite of the bracket, in many people's opinion, we're going to have a lot of discussion of that going on this show today. We have perhaps the best NCAA Division I women's lineup we've ever had. Mick Haley.
For an opening weekend. Yeah.
USC. Ann Cortez, Louisville. Jarrett Elliott, Texas. Dave Shondell, Purdue. Kelly Sheffield, Dayton. Rob Patrick, Tennessee. And whoever else happens to just call in.
Coach Shondell at Purdue, I'm excited to get him on the show because I just think he's done a remarkable job there.
We're still working on Sheffield and Patrick, but Cortez, Shondell, Haley, and Elliott will all be joining us. We have been efforting, for those of you that have been keeping up, on getting Diane Turnham on this program. She's been very accommodating. We were trying to get her a week ago.
Yeah.
Throughout the show, and there were all these issues about who we were and if it was okay and could she come on. And it wasn't her. It was the NCAA or some approval
group. So the NCAA was asking who we were.
Yeah. And they were calling the AVCA to find out who we were. I think the AVCA knows who we are.
We won an award from them, so hopefully they know who we are.
And then she was in a meeting and unavailable and so on. Then she was scheduled to come on Monday. She's all set. Going to come on, and then she could come on Tuesday if we could get the show done Tuesday. But I'm working Monday, I'm working Tuesday, you're working
Monday and Tuesday.
Monday and Tuesday, so impossible.
Yeah.
And she's in a meeting today. So no fault of Diane Turnham's. She is not here with us. We will continue efforting to get her on this program to talk about the debacle. Really, the most attention has gone to SC, who is number one in the coaches poll and seeded seventh in this tournament. Geeter, what do you think about that?
Well, personally, it's a Travis Shamockery. I mean, it's Travis Shamockery.
I've never heard that one.
It's what me and a couple of my friends say. When you're the number one team in the country, you're playing arguably the best volleyball in the country. They won the Pac-12, been on fire the last couple of months. You're a top four seed. Do they have to be the number one overall seed?
No.
They don't have to be. But they need to be a top four seed. They need to be a one seed in a bracket, without a question. I disagree with the Iowa State seeding. I believe in the other three. I believe in Nebraska. I believe in Texas.
Iowa State, number four, with a record of 22-5. What's wrong with that one?
Didn't win their conference. That doesn't even matter. But because Nebraska and Illinois, you know, are in the same conference. Lost to Texas both times. Lost to Oklahoma. A couple of losses in there. Lost on the last day of the season.
Backing it in.
I believe they lost last day season, maybe to A&M. I have to look right now.
Okay.
So I just don't think that they deserve the top four seed. There's no question SC does over them.
Yeah, seventh is a bit far. I'm with you. It could easily be fourth. Be okay. Everything be all right.
Yeah.
But it's also the group that they're with. So they end up with Hawaii, Pepperdine, Nebraska, all on their side. Oregon, another Pac-10 team in there. Not a good spot for SC, considering the end of the season that they had and that they are ranked number one. And there's been a lot of complaints about the knowledge level of the committee.
Is our message board up, by the way?
It's up.
Okay. I can't see it. How does you and I get a higher seed than USC?
I mean, they're 32-1. I'm not sure who they play, but they're 32-1.
The MAC conference getting four teams, I have a problem with that. I have a lot of problems.
Well, you and Mick Haley have a lot of problems.
Hey, listen, here's the bottom line. Every time a basketball bracket comes out, there's always complaints. There's always arguments. I think that's what makes it fun. But I think with our sport, what is driving the fans crazy is the people that are on this committee and putting these things together. What are they using? Are they following the sport during the year?
Well, okay. I got to know.
Are they talking to some coaches? Are they watching matches? Because you can't tell me you are when you look at the top 16 seeds. I mean, you know, Florida State's a 12 seed. Should they be a top 16 seed? Fine. But, you know, Pep beats them. Pep beats UCLA. Pep's a 15 seed. They beat Florida State. Shouldn't they be 12 then and Florida State be 15?
Yeah.
You know, Hawaii's 10. They're third in the country.
They're using the RPI.
29-1. Absolutely they are.
They're going down the RPI, and they're not
100%.
They're not doing much else with it, is what the complaint is. I got a note here about the committee, and I want to know if all these are true. 10 members on the committee. Only three, based on their bios, have sat in the chair as a head coach. Of those three, two had losing career records, one in the 80s. The third was 17 matches over 500, but destroyed both programs she managed. This is one of our listeners throwing this one out. Seven members that have virtually no knowledge or history of the game. Basically, committee members trying to climb to the next NCAA committee. Now, I don't understand how that process works. Somebody else had mentioned that too in an email that said, these folks are on the volleyball committee hoping to get on the basketball committee. Is this a paid position? Perhaps the oddest member is one whose background is that of a sports information specialist. Says, no wonder they cannot eyeball the results of a mathematical selection system and see where that system failed.
The bottom line is this, and Pepperdine had to do this, and I'll use that as an example because obviously I know that program well. you know, last year they were a team that didn't get in. And as a staff, they talked about how we can't go through this next year.
Right.
We're going to have a good team. So they went out and scheduled the toughest schedule they could get. They went to Hawaii and played them twice, opened up the season with Texas, then played UCLA and beat them, then went on the road, played Dayton, Florida State, Michigan, back-to-back-to-back, won mm-hmm. 2 of the 3.
Okay.
So obviously we've had some good wins, and that's how they got into the top 20 and stayed there. And then only lost one time. That was to St. Mary's in conference. But they had to get their RPI up. It's in the top 14 or 15, whatever it is. But that's how you have to do it. So those teams that are not happy, you got to schedule tougher non-conference.
Well, let's look at the RPI. So here's the RPI as of the 26th. Has Illinois number one, Texas number two. So they move those folks. Texas one, Illinois three. Coming in at number two is Nebraska, who in the RPI is four. Iowa State sitting at third in the RPI. So Big Ten, Big 12, Big 12, Big Ten leading off the RPI. UNI comes in at five. That's one you really don't like.
Yep.
Purdue, Hawaii, Southern Cal, Tennessee, Florida State, Penn State, Minnesota, Kentucky. Pardon me.
I'm not saying
Northern
UNI's,
Illinois.
Listen, I'm not saying UNI is not a good team. I'm not saying that. I'm saying they shouldn't be seeded ahead of USC. And that's final.
Didn't you and I get a good seed last year and get knocked out first round?
They got knocked out very early. Might have been first round. We'll have to check that. First or second for sure.
You know, another source I have talking about the committee itself said that he was talking to a coach up in the Bay Area. So the committee member lives right there. Could go see Stanford. Could go see Cal. Could see him when they play UCLA, SC, Oregon. Could see the entire Pac-10 basically, or Texas coming up there, whoever's coming out there, Nebraska coming out, whoever it is that's coming out that year, could go and see those matches. And you know how many times that person's been in the gym?
I'm gonna say zero.
Zero. That's what I'm hearing. Now, again, this is just what I'm hearing because I'm not there. But we're hearing that the committee is disconnected at best from actually viewing volleyball. Now, we don't know how much they watch on TV. We don't know how much research they do, and that's why I want to talk to Diane, is find out when they're sitting in this room over Thanksgiving, what's the discussion that's going on? Because obviously they've gone down the RPI, but they've changed it a little bit. They've
yeah,
moved
that's
a couple
what I mean.
Of teams.
They're, yeah, they're obviously going down the RPI, but they're also saying, well, let's move them up two spots. You know, Texas A&M got a 16 seed. That's sparked a lot of controversy on the Volley Talks and the websites like that, and they're 17th RPI.
Well, part of it is that if you put in a bid to host, and I was reading that from some quotes from Diane Turnham about teams offering to host weekends, right? Because you need teams that will host weekends, and I'll have to look it up here. If you're in the top 16, then you get an opportunity to host. Let's bring into discussion Brandon Rosenthal, our old friend from Lipscomb University, who took down their third consecutive ASUN championship to put themselves into this tournament, and they will face Texas A&M, the aforementioned number 16, who is hosting, coming up tomorrow. So, Brandon, what do you think about your placement into this tournament, as you're not at Dayton for the first time that I can remember?
No, we're not at Dayton, but Dayton is with us, so we cannot escape the Flyers. You know, I'm excited. I'm excited to be at a different site. You know, it's a little odd to see three teams from, you know, in one pod all have to travel. So I guess my question would be, it just looks like this was all kind of set for us to be at Lexington. And then I think with the big win from Texas A&M over Iowa State over the weekend, I get the feeling everything moves down to, you know, to College Station. So, you know, either way, we like our draw. I'm excited to play, you know, somebody that really doesn't know us. But, you know, we've talked about this off air, Kevin. I think this is one of those things where a media poll would definitely, and whether they choose to use it or not, I think, you know, the NCAA's kind of rationale is, well, hey, that's just the coaches. So, you know, I think having a nonpartisan poll would, you know, would help that situation.
So the rationale is we don't follow it. We know better. Is that where we're at?
I don't know why a media poll
would matter. If they're already ignoring the college poll, why would a media poll have any bearing on what's happening?
Well, and I think this is where, you know, my idea comes in is, okay, if the media poll and the coaches poll are very similar, you know, now all of a sudden people are going to have to answer questions. I think, you know, you see the article by ESPN, Michelle Vopel, you know, basically calling out the committee. You know, what ends up happening is when bigger institutions such as ESPN and such as, you know, some of these bigger, you know, universities start to, whatever you want to call it, raise Cain or whatnot, you know, the NCAA has to look at some of this stuff because those people are also putting stuff, you know, on their network. So I think it would be interesting. You know, I think, you know, what you guys have is, you know, the grassroots of, you know, could be something big or bigger than what you anticipate 10 years down the road.
All right. Well, Brandon, we're glad you're out of Dayton, even though you have Dayton. Good luck against Texas A&M. We've got Jared Elliott coming up right now.
Thanks, guys. Have a good
one. Thanks for booking everybody today. Brandon Rosenthal, our head booker for a lot of the other coaches we have coming on today. But we have a man next who you booked, as a matter of fact, and I think you've spoken to once or twice.
Yeah, we spoke during the week. The head coach at the University of Texas, and they garnered the number one overall seed at 22-4. I believe they've won 17 or 18 in a row. That is Jared Elliott, Texas Longhorns. Jared, welcome to the Net Live.
Thanks, Keith.
How's it going?
Good. Just getting prepared for our first couple rounds here.
You know, Jared, as you guys get prepared to actually play in the matches, the rest of us in the volleyball world get 1 week to complain about the bracket, argue about the bracket. How much do you get involved, or how much do coaches talk about it with each other?
Well, there's always a heated debate after every selection show, and I think it comes down to, you know, the committee in terms of their knowledge on it. And their understanding of volleyball, but it also comes down to our coaches and our coaches' organization. And every year it seems like we are fed up with it and we are disappointed with it, but for some reason we never take that to another level and try to create a different format in regards to how to structure this tournament so it is fair and we can get the best teams involved and also how we can become a Tier 1 sport.
Do you think it's fair?
No, I don't think it's fair. I think there's some guidelines that you have to understand, though. I mean, there's a test every year for us as coaches, and that test is scheduling. And you have to go out and schedule. And the tougher that you schedule and the better that your conference schedules as well, there's going to be a direct correlation to your RPI. And if you don't understand that concept, then you're going to be sitting in a situation where it's difficult.
Now, for SC, you know, they were the number one team in the country. They get a number seven seed. When you saw that, were you shocked?
Yeah, you know, I knew they were, I believe they were 9 in the RPI, and my understanding is they haven't moved teams more than 3 or 4, but I was still thinking that they would be a top 4 seed and kind of roll the dice of seeing who those 1 seeds would be or where those 1 seeds would end up. But, you know, in my mind, SC is deserving of a number 1 seed. You know, you win that conference, it's a tough conference, it's great. But at the end of the day, we're all evaluated on the RPI. And, you know, I understand where Mick's coming from and his frustrations on this, but you know, my frustrations would be a little bit more directed towards Cal and Washington. You know, their scheduling crushed the Pac-10's RPI. And, you know, when you have teams like Washington, Arizona State, Colorado, Utah, Oregon State, right now they're not in a great state with high RPIs, their conference is down. And when you have teams like Washington and Cal that are strong, then they need to go out and schedule some teams. I mean, for example, Cal returned everyone from last year's national championship team and only returned and needed to replace their setter. But they went and played Riverside, Fairfield, Florida International, Long Island, Virginia, East Carolina, UT Arlington, Nevada, and Sac State. And I believe Georgetown. Their highest RPI they played was 91. So how do you give them a grade in terms of evaluating? And when same thing with Washington. They did the same thing. And therefore, they're 30 to 34 in the RPI, and that ended up hurting USC's RPI.
So if you're Mick and you go to that conference meeting, you're saying, guys, we got to schedule tougher. Because when it comes to seedings, all they care about is RPI.
Absolutely. I mean, most of the conferences now are meeting and discussing how to go about that format. And I know that our conference did, and there's a couple other conferences to try to help out, you know, what do the top teams do, what do the mid-level teams do, and what do the bottom teams do, so that you can, you know, correlate the RPI to scheduling and being successful when the draw comes out.
Jared, you say everybody gets fed up every year and they start talking about a different system, but no action ever gets taken. What kind of system would you set up that would more accurately give teams control of their own destiny? Because it seems absurd to me that you can go out and schedule tough opponents, then you're left with your conference, and if your conference doesn't schedule tough opponents, then that hurts you. What kind of system would give the coaches better control over their own results, producing a better seed in the tournament?
Yeah, I think with these mass expansions with these conferences, whether it's the Big Ten or the Pac-12, it's giving very little matches outside of their conference, so it's harder to correlate how good teams are. And, you know, I've been saying this for the last year. I've been trying to kind of gather some support to do what men's basketball does. We need to go to a round and a half for all of our conferences and get better non-conference matches throughout the year. You know, as fans, you want to see Texas playing, you know, USC in the middle of the season, or Penn State playing, you know, Stanford, all those kind of matches, to give us some better opportunities to have better TV games, but also to give the committee some better understanding of who's good and who's not, to get better seating as the NCAA tournament comes out.
Should they split these conferences into two, the way football has kind of done, into a top and a bottom, or east and west, or however you want to phrase it, so that you have a champion of each section of the conference?
Yeah, I haven't looked into that one enough, but I just know that we're playing too many conference matches right now, and we need to get away from that a little bit more and play some non-conference matches so we can really muscle up and see, you know, who the best teams are. You know, it's hard to tell where Washington and Cal are because they played, you know, the Pac-10 teams, but they haven't played anybody else that's not part of that conference. And the same goes for our conference, probably, with some teams, and, you know, the Big Ten and the SEC.
Yeah, Cal number 29 in the RPI.
But I think, you know, I think the biggest thing that there's two things I want to point out. One is I understand the USC's thing. The other one that no one talks about is Penn State's draw. Every year, they don't play anybody in the first two rounds. You know, they need to send somebody out there as well, so they at least get some kind of formidable opponent to make this tournament fair. But I think the big thing that has to happen is we have to become a Tier 1 sport. And in order for that to happen, we have to generate revenue. And that's putting butts in the seats to make that happen. And we're going to have to, as an organization, we have to really look at, why are we following the men's basketball 64-team format? There are some other creative ways to allow monetary value to come to our sport so that we can seed more teams, and this can become a better tournament for all parties. And I would look at, you know, hosting the first and two rounds the way that we do it now. But I think what you do is you go to the Sweet 16, you have eight hosts, and one team comes in, and the top eight seeds get to host that round. And so you're talking right now, it would be Texas, Nebraska, who else is in that? UNI, USC, you know, Penn State, all these schools that can get anywhere between 2,500 to, you know, 8,000 to 10,000 fans, and you play the best 2 out of 3 format. So you're getting two nights there and potentially three nights where you're bringing in big revenue for our sport, and potentially somehow making it work so we can become a Tier 1 sport.
I would love to see volleyball as a Tier 1 sport.
Because then you can seed all 64 teams.
Chair, what would you like if you could do something differently? I know you just talked about making it a Tier 1 sport, but if you could do something differently in terms of if you were on the committee and you had 5 minutes, even though you don't have 5 minutes on the show, but 5 minutes to say, hey, listen, let's use this formula, half RPI, half this. What would be your kind of formula if you've thought about that?
I don't think the formula, regardless of what they look, they're just looking at numbers. They have no understanding of the volleyball around the country. They're not watching matches. You know, they're maybe watching regional matches, but they don't have a true understanding of who's good and who's not. So I think the understanding of what has to happen is we've got to get people that are educated. Maybe Karch, maybe you, Gita, if you're smart enough to get in there, to look at the bracket and say, hey, maybe you want to look at this. Maybe this isn't right. And, you know, just have some food for thought. Not that they're actually making the selection process, but somebody that can garner a little bit more true feel for what college volleyball is really about.
Why is Karch always a solution?
Keep going. You're on fire. I like it. Now, Jared, about your team. You guys are on a great little run ever since Shadair McNeil came back on the right side. Losing Kat Bell to the ACL made national news. She at the time, Jarrett, 36 attempts, no errors, 32 kills, I believe. What has it meant to your team to lose her, and why was she such an integral part as a true freshman?
Well, she was just figuring out how to play middle again. You know, she was on the left for us, and we moved to the middle because, you know, our kill production and our air production was suffering a little bit, and she was just starting to take off. And, you know, for how good of a volleyball player she was becoming, she was also a great emotional leader for us, and it was a big loss. But, you know, after last year's unfortunate situations with all the injury, our program right now is used to going through this right now, and we have to make adjustments, and we're confident in what Madeline Hudson can do. She's been playing great of late. She's been blocking for high numbers. And, you know, at the end of the day, we've still got a good team. We're very young, and we're inexperienced in terms of some of our attackers. But, you know, I think this tournament is wide open. I think you're going to see a lot of upsets. And I think it's the most competitive tournament from top to bottom that I've been a part of across the board.
You know, Jarrett, when you look at certain brackets as coaches, do you guys go, ooh, when you see Nebraska, Hawaii, SC in the same one, you see UCLA, Penn State in the same one? Is it like, oh man, we hope it gets there so we can see how this goes down?
Yeah, I'm concerned, you know, from the first match on. I think there'll be some upsets in the second round. I mean, the scary thing is that what can happen here is every regional host could lose before they get to the regionals, and we're going to be playing in front of 300 to 500 people. And we talk about trying to get to a tier one sport. It's not going to happen this year.
Well, Jarrett, good luck the rest of the way, buddy. We appreciate you speaking on the topic, and you know, it's great to hear, as I'm just saying on the message board right now, to hear opinions that drive discussions in our sport. Because I think the only way to get it to a top tier sport is for it to become relevant, you know, amongst other people that don't follow it like we do.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. You know, USC is the one that's stuck in it this year. It could very well be us next year, and it's tough. I mean,
Weren't you in Hawaii?
Yeah, in 2005, we had to play Hawaii, and we were both number 7 in the polls. I mean, that was the second round, and we got knocked out. We got beat up pretty good from Hawaii, and it's unfortunate. And, you know, we have to do a better job as coaches of getting together and making this topic continue on for long periods of time. I mean, we'll talk about it at the convention here at the Final Four, and then it's going to drop out, and we won't discuss it again at all. And it's kind of one of the things that I've been pushing for is that we need to have more conferences or more meetings at some of these qualifiers to make some of these things push forward and make this happen. And there's you know, Mick and Russ and Hebert and all those guys that did such a and Andy did such a great job of creating this wonderful sport for us and putting us on the map. But now there's, you know, our generation has to do a better job of continuing that and trying to help out and get together so that we can make better changes for our sport, because it's getting better and better, and the fans are gathering, and it's a great women's sport that is needed to be more on TV and needed to be a tier one sport.
Gotcha. Well, hey, buddy, we really appreciate it, man.
Jarrett Elliott,
all right,
thanks for joining us once again. Good luck. He has a point. Penn State. They got a walk last year. First couple of rounds. Everybody knows that. So looking at Jarrett's side of the bracket, if he beats Texas State, he would face either Michigan State or Arizona. Michigan State and Arizona, number 37 for Michigan State, number 49 for Arizona in RPI. If Penn State beats Liberty in the first round, they would face the winner of Delaware or American University. Those guys are ranked 79th and 94th down the RPI. So how do you figure that one? 30 RPI between the highest ranked, well, between the lowest ranked one. I now I've got it backwards. So Arizona 49th, Delaware 79th. That seems a little bit easy. I got to go through and pick out the rest of these, looking through the RPI. But I remember last year, the big complaint was that Penn State got a walk.
Well, I remember last year I complained about their road, and then they absolutely smashed everybody, and we had Russ Rose on the show, and I just said, you are the Lord of volleyball, 4 national championships in a row. I cannot complain about you ever again. Who is going to beat them?
Yeah, complain about it all you want. They took apart Cal.
This is the year that you think they're not going to win it, but someone's got to knock them out.
Right.
I mean – That is, you
they're
know,
not going
to
win
about,
it this year.
That's the team you don't want to play, Purdue. You know, and that's kind of my pick. Is the team you don't want to play is Purdue. But do you want to play Penn State?
You don't want to play Penn State.
Just to get over that hurdle.
Interesting. Another note on Penn State and what's going on here in the world. Heard yesterday, you probably know, being the reporter that you are for Fox Sports these days, the football head coach search committee over there at Penn State does not include football people, but does include one Russ Rose. It's on the search committee to replace the head football coach there at Penn State University. An interesting job at this point.
Wow. Whoever comes in to that job.
Is it a career killer?
No.
Is it a career builder?
It depends.
You follow a legend, it could be a career killer.
My thing with the whole Penn State situation, and I know we're getting off topic of the NCAA here, but is that I still don't think we know half of it. I think it's going to get even uglier. I think the coaches at Penn State for the other sports and people around there have been doing a good job under these circumstances. Our friend Jay Hossack, who's probably on the message boards right now, I mean, he works there as well. I mean, I'm sure it's been a tough month for these guys. But
you'll find out. Jay Hossack going to be joining you next week, co-hosting here.
I love it. I think the guy who gets that job, if he can handle that situation well in terms of the community and respecting what happened and just building that program, then I think if they can build back up and just have some success, you know, because believe me, they're probably going to take a nice little fall. But if he can keep them relevant, then it could be a career builder.
They still have talent there. It's not like the talent went away. Question is, do you lose recruits? I think that's going to be the real question. How, do you start to lose recruits?
Yeah, no question.
We do have confirmed Kelly Sheffield, Rob Patrick, Dave Shondell, and Cordes all joining us here on the program. And next guy calling in, I believe he's on the line, Geeter. This man is the head coach at USC, University of Southern California, here in Los Angeles. Been on the show several times as a women's national team head coach through 2000 and has been in volleyball just about forever. Coached Texas before then. Welcome to the Net Live once again, Mick Haley.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Mick. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for making the time. We know you're busy.
You know, Mick and I were down on the field for that SC-UCLA game, and he was part of our pregame show, so... Mick, thank you for joining us. Sorry about Monday, but we always appreciate you making time for the show.
No, a lot of fun for me. Thanks, guys, for having me.
Mick, we got to start off with this. Shockingly to the rest of us in the volleyball world, we just had Jared Elliott on as well, and he was shocked as well that you guys are the number 7 seed and not a top 4 seed. When that came out, and you're watching that selection show. And by the way, I thought you did a very good job, and I thought the Occupy NCAA thing was hilarious. What were your thoughts when you saw you as a number 7 seed?
Well, I was a little shocked. You're right, but I was more interested in how they got to that point, because a lot of times something that doesn't make sense on the surface, you know, after you walk through it, there might have been a way that they could have gotten to that point, I guess. I just couldn't figure out how. And I think that's what most of the coaches want to always know, is they want to know the route that the committee takes to place the teams in the order that they place them. And that seems to be the most frustrating thing in the last 3 years, the body of work of this committee over the last 3 years.
Mick, how much interaction is there, if any, with committee members and the coaches over the last few years?
Well, there's been no interaction with myself. It seems, and that's a great question, because I have some suggestions that I think would go a long way, and they're not really mine. It's what we used to do to get to this process, and I think would solve a lot of those problems, but there's been no interaction to my knowledge.
What are some of those suggestions?
Well, I think that take the nature of this whole thing. The committee is formed by SWAs from schools who are overworked. SWA position is one of the hardest positions in the country. You're dealing with a number of sports. Athletic directors pile all of the, not only the women's sports, but other Olympic sports or what they consider minor sports on these SWAs. The SWAs, to get advancement, need to get positions on these committees, these sports committees, to move up in the NC2A ranks. And in some cases, they do it as a labor of love. In some cases, they're trying to advance themselves. And so they put themselves out there. Every time they are on a phone call or travel to an event, they get behind at their home school. So for them to sit down and watch volleyball match after volleyball match like we do as coaches is probably unrealistic. So what's the best way to get them informed? And the way we used to do it was like this. We used to divide the country into 6 or 8 regions. Each one of the SWAs that was on the committee would oversee one of those committees, and those committees would rank the teams in their region so that they would be able to know the strength of the people in those regions. And then they would have a list. So there would be 6 to 8 committees or 6 to 8 lists of teams ranked in each region relative to each other. They would meet every 3 weeks, I believe, on telephone calls and do this, and then there would be one master call every month where the 8 people would share the information on those teams. And so in a lot of cases, it was important for everybody to be on those calls so that they would be knowledgeable of how the teams were doing and what the coaches thought was going on. And so this was the process throughout the 4 months. And by November, everybody on the committee felt pretty good about who the top 8 or 12 or even 16 teams would be, with the occasion that people would be on the bubble. And they would be much more knowledgeable, and the coaches then would be having input from the regions. And there would be certain coaches that would rotate onto these committees. And the only problem with that is some people thought some coaches were being unfair and yada, yada, yada. But that was a pretty good process, and it allowed the committee to really be knowledgeable. And Lou Wallace was the person that then kind of brought an RPI possibility to the committee to help with strength of schedule. And the RPI was basically to identify chief wins and losses, and the ABCA does the matrix for that now. So those are all key ingredients in trying to evenly place the teams in the bracket so they can go at it in December. And I think some consideration should go back to a system like that or something similar that would allow the committee members to be educated at a higher level as to the quality and of the team's plays and injuries that are happening and any other thing that comes to surface. It also doesn't surprise the coaches at the end as to where they might get placed, and it gives them a little bit better knowledge to try to plan, and people that know they're on the bubble can then really work hard with their teams to see if they can't pull off some great wins at the end of the season. And it's just a positive approach to trying to get in the tournament.
Mick, we had Jared on here, and he talked about that he would be frustrated if he was you as well, but he might look at Cal and Washington and be frustrated with them because of the way they scheduled. And he talked about Cal's non-conference schedule, no one with less than 90 RPI, Washington a weak non-conference schedule, and said that in the meetings, that's where you guys should talk about those guys and teams that are really good, like a Cal, returning everybody except for Carly Lloyd, scheduling tougher. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that's kind of short-sighted in a couple of ways, because that's easier said than done. Let me point out something on why the teams can't schedule in some cases. The RPI, who everybody seems to be afraid of, because the theory is that the committee uses the RPI almost exclusively, the RPI is what everybody works off of, and some of the conferences have manipulated that. And factor two is the critical one, that 50% of the RPI is off of your opponent's wins and losses. And so one of the things is the top 50 teams won't schedule the top 10 or 12 teams because they want 10 wins to go before they go into their conference schedule, which forces like teams on either coast and or if they're in the top 10 to have a very small selection of teams they can get to play them. And if you think about it, why would anybody want to come and play Stanford and Cal over the weekend if they're trying to get 10 or 11 wins before they go into their conference so they can have 20 wins to get into the tournament? And I understand the short view of that, why don't you schedule better, but it is very difficult if you're projected as a top 4 to top 8 or even a top 10 team to get a schedule. John Cook will tell you that. Everybody will tell you that. And so it's not really that easy. And I think in men's basketball they had this problem and they couldn't get any good games on TV in the December month, so they started awarding teams extra credit for playing top 10 or top 20 or even top 25 preseason teams to get those games to go out there and not penalize them for playing those matches.
Mick, you mentioned that the conferences are manipulating the RPI. How do you think they're doing that, and who's responsible?
I think it's pretty well documented that the Missouri Valley and the MAC now have taken a look at how you can get the highest scores, and they've gone out and scheduled conference winners. And they're not a threat, see, so they can get conference to conference. They've scheduled a number of conference winners so that they can raise their RPI. And those conferences are pretty even, probably in the 35 to 150 rank of teams in the RPI. And so they've kind of made a pact, and this is not a CIA kind of deal, but they just looked at the numbers and kind of done a handshake and a wink and say, let's play each other and we both win because we move up on the RPI. And I think they've done their due diligence. I think that's what Jarrett was referring to. I didn't hear his comments, but the way you presented them, I would think that's what he's saying, is you have to be more astute. But, you know, that takes away from focus of coaching your team and trying to get the best volleyball out there you can get. If we have to manipulate the system, I'd rather change the system and not have to play those games. Junior coaches are great at figuring out ways to manipulate the junior national championships and the AAU championships and all of that, trying to figure every way to get into the tournament. And I don't blame them, but it's kind of a waste of time. I'd like to put that energy into training and coaching and teaching the players.
Now, we've had reports from a lot of different people in the volleyball world and some coaches and people complaining that these committee members don't really watch. How much volleyball do you think these folks watch in person or on TV? Is that even answerable?
I really don't know. I have to think that if they watch on TV, then you have to give the Big Ten the nod because of the Big Ten network. Don't you think they've done a great job in getting the product out from coast to coast on DirecTV? I think that's the most available product out there for people to watch. For them to watch other matches, they would have to ask for tapes from other schools, and I'm certainly... we haven't had any requests for that. So I don't know how much is available for them to watch, whether they actually go out. I guess that would be a good question for the committee, but I just think it's difficult to ask them to work their jobs, be on the committee, and then watch as many matches as we would watch. I mean, we're so single-focused as coaches. We're watching 4 or 5 matches every week minimum just to prepare, not to mention what we're looking at to see what might come up down the road. And we're putting in 16, 18 hour our days, and I know the committee members don't have that kind of time to put in.
Coach, I know you and David Letterman are two of the most famous Ball State alums. Were you proud to see Ball State in the tournament and a little surprised to see four MAC teams?
I was surprised at four MAC teams. I'm pretty proud that the MAC is doing well. I think the MAC volleyball has been very good. They have a group of coaches in that conference that's been beating each other's ears off for the last 3 or 4 years. And Steve Shondell has certainly been a wonderful high school coach and junior coach, and now for him to come to the collegiate ranks and challenge brother Dave and John, that'd be a pretty fun match if Ball State happened to end up against Purdue.
Mick, real quick before we let you go, because I know you're in a hurry, just focusing on your team, you were obviously dealt that blow with Fallon in the beginning of the year. You know, you have your whole team coming back from that Final Four run. She then leaves school. Alexis is hurt a little bit. What has been the key for you guys? You seem to really find that rhythm, you know, late there in September. And give us a couple of the keys to this season.
Well, I think we had great leadership from Kendall Bateman and Aaron Yoder and Natalie Haglund, our three senior, junior, sophomore captains, and good support by our other seniors to buy into that and give us great leadership. Sarah Shaw coming into the lineup to stabilize the passing has been wonderful. She's been a great stabilizer. Haglund just gives you more than you see in the numbers. She is just a tremendous energy-producing person and helps Bateman a great deal in that regard. Katie Fuller has really come into her own offensively and has really brought along her skills. So we've had a total team effort, but if you look at that and then you look at the people that are behind the scenes who constantly are pushing and getting better, Hannah Schreier played 2 months for us as a freshman middle and did a wonderful job as a freshman until Olgaard could get healthy. And gave Olgaard a chance to wait to get in the lineup until she was 100%. That's really been a big key. Kirby Burnham comes in on the left side for us and has started for us in several occasions and has produced very well there. We have Emily Young on the right side that can back up Fuller at any time. And Haley Crone backing up in the setting with Bateman has been wonderful. And then we have Aaron Yoder as a serving specialist and back row player. And then Bria Russ coming into her own. She's one of the most physical back row players you're going to see to go with that group. And Lauren Williams and Olgaard now at 6'5", really give us a good tandem in the middle.
Coach, I got to imagine the ladies, especially after making a run to the Final Four, feel a little disrespected with that seven seed, and I don't think you're going to need to motivate them. Do you agree?
No, I don't think so. But I don't think they're upset. I think we kind of talked all year about this possibility, and we talked about if we want to win a championship, we have to win six in a row, and it doesn't matter whether we get tough competition early or late or all six matches, it's still the order of the business. And so they were ready for this, and they didn't get too excited either way, and nobody was only interested in who we played first. And that's the best part about this team. They just kind of have a workmanlike mentality. They go after it. And so I don't think we're using any bulletin board material right now to motivate us. I think our sights are set pretty high, and I think they've worked very hard all year for this opportunity. Now we'll see how we can do at going after it.
Hey, Mick, you're Coach of the Year, right? Pac-12?
Yeah, that's pretty special, you know, because we have tremendous coaches in this conference, and when they give you that kind of an honor, you have to really feel good, because we do everything we can to beat each other's ears off, I got to tell you. And so,
yeah, congratulations,
you know, when we go at it, thanks. But that also means that we have awfully good players and a great coaching staff
from Tim Nolan and Cookie Stevens and John Shea and the people that, that support our program. It's a nice honor and very, very appreciative of that because I know how hard all the other coaches in the conference work.
Coach, one last question. With the national team season just concluded, you're a former national team coach of the women's side. How much do you watch that? Are you able at all to take in some of those matches?
I watch it every day, actually. I feel like I'm still doing it. I that tournament is the hardest tournament you will ever, ever play in. Going 3 days and 2 days off and 3 days again and 2 days off. And I've seen the Cubans be 8-0 and crying. It is so mentally challenging. And they were the toughest of the players when I was coaching. And that just challenges you to the nth degree. I felt that Robin Amo really grew up in that tournament as a setter for us. And Danielle Scott was an amazing leader when we were going through that because she'd come in the locker room and people would be ornery and whatever, and she would just settle it right down and say, look, this is what we signed up for. We've got to deal with it. So I think the U.S. team did a wonderful job. I mean, just tremendous to be able to function like that day in and day out, and the performances by our individual players were so good that I think we've got a great shot in London.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic to watch them. Glad to hear you're watching. Hope your team is watching. I hope the next generation of players has some touch with the national team at this point.
Pretty hard for those guys to identify with that because they don't play on U.S. soil. You know, we don't get a pro league for our women here, or at least bring tournaments to our country that are highlighted. They're not going to watch the international competition. It's just hours out of their day, you know, but we try to bring bits and pieces to them and highlight players that they either have played against or have watched. So it's a constant battle to get our national team out in front of our collegiate players.
No doubt. Coach, thanks for the time. Good luck this upcoming
weekend. Yeah, you guys keep it up. You're doing a great job. It's pretty fun hearing volleyball all the time.
Thanks, Coach.
Cool. Thanks, Coach. Talk to you.
All right. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Mick Haley, head coach, USC. We're going to take a little break here. Much more to come. We have Ann Cortez, Dave Shondell, Kelly Sheffield, Rob Patrick, all going to join us. We're going to talk a little international. This isn't NCAA only. We're going to talk a little international. Women's concluded, as Mick mentioned.
We also got to talk about what he said regarding Cal and Washington not being able to schedule tougher teams.
I think that's an interesting point about 1 through 10 not being able to schedule.
Yeah, but there's a lot of teams that are able to
50.
Do it. Nebraska was able to do it. Texas was able to do it. He was able to do it. Stanford was able to. So it's, you know, you can find a way.
You could.
It'll be an interesting debate.
All right. We'll be right back. The Net Live. More to come.
Volleyball Mag, the industry's number one volleyball magazine. Volleyball Magazine has been serving the volleyball community for over 20 years with the latest in volleyball news and information, product reviews, athlete profiles, fitness, health, and travel-related features. It's published 9 times a year. Volleyball Magazine brings you the inside to the access to the sport's biggest stars. Whether you're interested in the junior, collegiate, or professional level, sand or indoor, Volleyball Magazine has you covered both on and off the court. Visit us now. Do it. www.volleyballmag.com and subscribe for 1 year for only $19.99. Do that now and receive a new water bottle, a $49 value, free compliments of our friends at Naturally Energized Water Bottle Company. Volleyball Mag, the industry's number one volleyball magazine.
Adrenaline shot. I'm doing a fluid busting through with new moves. Whether you like it or not, you see, I've learned a lot. A bit of who I am and most of what I'm not. So I gotta give 100% of all that I got and can't job till I'm on the side. Put my name on the rock away, chill west coast with the heart after God. Ain't about to stop, battles are fought. William Wallace, brave heart, strictly fight for the cause. And I've been given the same as the rest of you got. This never ending rope with knots, and I can never fall off because I'm always reaching. Rock.
having a dozen older brothers, man, but that ain't my point. I'm just speaking over this joint like it never comes up. Comes out, no doubt, the appearance has changed. Boys and man, I'm looking in the mirror, get it together. Keeps no longer clever, just try to be a man, name, and let's act like one. Cause they don't want to hear complaining, just get the job done.
Welcome back in the net live here on the volleyballnetwork.com. Kevin sitting in with Geeter on a Wednesday. Kind of an unusual show for us to be sitting here on a Wednesday. If you want to keep in touch with us during the week, thenetlive@gmail.com. We do read those emails, listen, and that becomes part of the discussion. We also have our shirts, the Net Live. Geeter sporting one right now. He looks comfy, looks cozy, looks happy.
Take a picture.
Vala Clothing. VALA Clothing.com. And we will have some shirts with us down in San Antonio coming up. We're going to be there for ABCA convention in just a couple
Am
of
I
weeks.
Going?
Time. You're supposed to be going.
Okay.
Tim Kelly, buy your ticket yet?
Nope.
Supposed to buy your ticket. Tim Kelly, bring it promotions. Get that done for Geeter so he can be there. All right, a couple of interesting comments there, Geeter. One I know caught your eye, and I wrote it down as well, and I'll get your thoughts on it here because.
Yeah.
Mick said that number 1 through 10 have a hard time scheduling numbers 10 through 50 to bump their RPI up. What do you think about that?
Obviously, there's some truth to that. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of schools that don't want to play those top 10 schools, but Texas was able to do it. Nebraska was able to do it. UCLA was able to do it. They were all projected top 10 teams. Mick was able to do it. So Cal and Washington, I mean, for no one to be under 70 in RPI, you just got to do a better job. You know, with Washington's case, you know, Jimmy Mack knew what he was doing. He's got a young team. You know, he's got Van Zandt on the left, freshman. He's got Summer Ross on the right, freshman. They probably came out of the gate, scheduled a little soft, to get some wins, to get them going. I don't know. All I know is they actually got into a great bracket, and I think there was a stretch where in 7 matches, Washington lost 5.
Yeah.
In 5 of those matches, they got swept in 4 of them and won 1 set. They were 1-15.
Right.
In sets. They actually got into the best bracket.
Yeah, they're in with Iowa State, the number 4, and Minnesota number 13.
Who's good, but that's the best bracket to be in, right? They got rewarded. But I'm saying their RPI is so low. Cal is the team that, you know, be interesting to have Coach Feller on here.
Yeah.
You know, talk about what his thoughts were going into the preseason.
Well, I hope they make really it. We can talk to him in San Antonio.
Yeah, because they didn't play anybody.
Yeah.
And I noticed that right off the bat as well.
And they have a good team.
Great team.
Yeah.
So.
I have a job for the chat board because I'm sick of looking at the screen here. I've been charting who the top 16 play in the first round, the RPI of the top 16's opponents. So, for instance, Texas got Texas State.
Yeah,
Texas, number 1, got number 72. I haven't gotten number 2 with Nebraska. I can't find Jackson State as of yet. So get me Jackson State. SoCal got Yale, who's number 91. That's USC, got number 91. Illinois, I want to know where Central Michigan is. I want to know where Niagara is. I want to know where Sacred Heart is located in the RPI. Because I want to see the comparison here, because you look up Penn State, and this is a point that's been brought up last year and, again, has bubbled to the surface this year. Penn State facing Liberty in the first round, number 145. Now, I have been unable to find anyone else. Now, I haven't gone through the bracket, but
even Jay Hossack might have a problem with that.
Through their own bracket, I have not been able to find anyone. For instance, the lowest-ranked team in Texas's entire bracket is number 89, Lipscomb, our own Brandon Rosenthal. In Texas's bracket, number 89. And only the three teams that I've put in the other bracket, which includes UCLA and Penn State, Liberty 145, American and Delaware. American 94, Delaware 79. And those are all right in Penn State's wheelhouse because they are the next round, winner of Delaware American. So I wonder, is there a conspiracy to get Russ Rose and his group a good run toward at least the round of 16?
They're going Central Michigan 74.
Okay,
Niagara,
let me write that down.
146, Yale 91.
Give me that again.
Central Michigan is 74.
94.
Niagara 146.
Okay, so there's one. 146.
I'm sorry, Niagara's 148.
148, okay.
Yale is 91.
Yeah, got Yale. Okay, how about Jackson State? Next. I love the chat board. Thanks to everybody out there for doing this. Because I was sitting here during an interview scrolling up and down through this list.
And as the coach wants to remind you, placement of teams that aren't seeded are done based on geographic location, not RPI.
Where's Liberty at? Where's Liberty at? That's what I want to know. Lloyd Ball just sent me a message. Because I've been communicating with him about the international game.
Yeah.
He says, did you Bogart my thoughts already? Can't get on the chat board. I am blacklisted. How do we blacklist Lloyd Ball?
Blacklisted on the chat board? Come on.
Well, there's been a lot of misbehavior from people with Russian IP addresses, so you're out, Lloyd. And the answer is yes, but I did credit you with several of your ideas on the broadcast yesterday. Yeah, I mean, look, anytime you have these brackets, that's part of the fun. Of having this bracket, part of the fun of having this tournament, and I'm glad the tournament exists in 64 for the women's matches, in the women's game.
Yeah.
You'll get these discussions no matter what.
As I said, in 4 days, we cannot talk about it anymore.
Right, because it'll be over. But be for over. Right now, Penn State is the empire. Darth Vader, Russ Rose leading them, and they've engineered the bracket. They've paid off Lando Calrissian, who set up the bracket, you know, to make a nerd reference for this whole thing.
Yeah.
Niagara, 148. It's good. I did a Niagara Marist match a couple of years ago. Only work I've done for ESPNU. It was good. Match was good. I don't know how good I was. Iowa State, Milwaukee. That'll be a good one. What do you think about Minnesota? What do you think about Minnesota? They have a chance?
From what I hear, really, really good at home. In the beginning of the year, they were playing great. They all know each other. Good system. Yeah, they're a dangerous team, especially in that bracket. There's no question about it. You know, I have Purdue coming out of that bracket. I've been all over Purdue.
Purdue's been hot. They've picked up some good
teams. I have the Big Ten Network. I watch it sometimes. They're really, really good at home. But it's in Minneapolis. So I think that could be a great game. I have Minnesota playing Iowa in that Elite Eight.
Minnesota playing Iowa.
Yeah, Minnesota beating Iowa State. I have Minnesota beating Washington. That's what I have.
Very good. Let's talk a little international for a second, because I know more about it. And then we're going to get back to some of these coaches. 10:15, Kelly Sheffield coming in the program from Dayton. 10:20, our old friend Ann Cortez. We're going to do a quick rapid fire. Tell us about your team. Tell us about the matchup. Did you get the right matchup? So on. Quick rapid fire with those folks, Dave Chandel, Rob Patrick. But internationally, if you've been following along, the women finished second. Fantastic finish for them. Destiny Hooker, unbelievable.
Ball One USA joined us.
There he is.
There he is. Sorry to cut you off, but he's not blacklisted.
He's been unbanned. Good, because I'm just getting to the part where I'm stealing his ideas. But the women finished second. Fantastic finish for them. Destiny Hooker, unbelievable. Lindsey Berg, fantastic.
Safe to say she's healthy?
She looks pretty healthy when she's going OT all the time. Yeah, she looks healthy. She's headed off to Brazil.
I don't think you could stop her if you were blocking the pin.
What are you talking about?
I'm just saying right now, today, I don't think you're in the kind of shape to block her right now. I think you'd struggle. I think she'd have her way with you.
Right now, today, yes.
Today.
Yes.
Like, as we're speaking, like, you get up right now, drive to American Sports Center, I think she dominates you. I think she hits 422. With me or Lloyd flowing the sauce out there.
Wait, no. With you, I lose at least 100 percentage, or she loses 100 percentage points.
True.
Lloyd, she might gain
100
percentage points.
To be out of system.
Points. Yeah.
Even though the ball's on the money.
All right, so.
Have you been stealing Lloyd's thunder for a decade?
How's that possible?
I'm figuring it out now that you get his ideas, and then you come on the air and regurgitate them and
pretend they're my own.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been doing that. Well, and when he's out there winning a gold medal and I'm announcing it, every chance I get, I'm just talking about me and my time on the team.
Yeah.
Not what he's doing out there.
Because
now.
Lloyd would have never been the setter that he was in 2008 without spending those years with you.
Without having to deal with Barnett. All right, so the men's team now in action. In this tough tournament, 11 matches, 14 days. Brutal tournament, as Mick Haley mentioned. There is no tougher tournament in sports. And I think that when you I hear about all this stuff about an NBA franchise in Europe or an NFL franchise in Europe and the travel they'd have to do, and oh my God, you'd have to go to London to play a game and it would be a disadvantage, and what about the time change? We got to fly 5 hours in first class. It would be, or a charter. That would be really rough. But this is the definition of rough. 11 matches, 14 days, every one of them matters. And in fact, on the men's side, it's a much tougher tournament than the women's side. Top to bottom, really good teams, minus maybe two.
Top two make qualify?
Three.
Top three qualify?
Top three qualify.
Ooh, that's brutal.
Women's side was Italy, U.S., China. China, big surprise. Brazil, big surprise they didn't qualify. On the men's side.
I mean,
side,
Brazil will then have to go to that, go to another tournament and qualify.
Right. They go to a regional qualifier, because there are five zones across the world.
Yes. So they go to their zone.
Right. South American zone.
Mm-hmm.
The Americans is Norseca.
Gotcha.
So for the Americans, on the men's side, brutal tournament. Only walkovers, Egypt, which they've already beaten 3-0. Japan, which they've beaten 3-0. Iran, the Asian champion, not a walkover. The United States did defeat Iran as well, but not really a walkover.
They're decent, huh?
They took a couple of teams five. They beat a couple of teams in five. I think it was Serbia they beat in five. Poland they beat in five. I got to go back and look. Just a total surprise.
How's your pronunciation on those guys?
Oh, Iran is tough. Iran is tough. I tell you what, what's the toughest team to pronounce? I tell you what, Thailand. I've done Thailand a couple of times on the women's side. That is really tough. Plum Jit, Iran Kit, all these other. You start just writing phonetically. Forget actual writing the names. Just write phonetically.
Oh, I do that with names here in the States for football. I mean,
I'll
do that Friday. Yeah, I mean, it's a full panic.
So, yeah, the men's team started out with the very first match. Faced off against China, had a good win there, but then they faced Brazil and Russia. So nothing like starting at the top of the equation. Russia, a wild card team, been just wildly up and down, but still I think the best team. United States going down to both those teams pretty easily, including a collapse against Russia in set number three, which was atrocious to watch. Leading 23-18, lost 26-24.
Was Reed in the front row?
I don't even remember. It was ugly. I don't think he was. I think Sean Rooney got several sets. He was in the match at that point.
How's Reed playing?
Reed had a rough match during that match. Overall, Reed's been playing okay. But he had a rough match. Both outside hitters, he and Matt Anderson, struggled mightily against Russia, both well into negative territory.
How's the setting?
Brutal. That's the big problem. Setting is brutal.
Who's starting? Was it Thornton?
Well, take your pick. Each day it's somebody different.
Really?
Yeah. Starts out with Hansen. After Thornton started all World League, now it's Hansen. Next match, it's Thornton. No, I'm sorry. It was Hansen, then it was Hansen. Then halfway through that match, it was Thornton. Then it was Thornton starting again. Then it was Hansen, then it was Thornton. And I think that's where I'm at. Because it's weird, because I'm doing it behind. So I'm working again tomorrow, two more matches. So there's the real world, and then I'm in the Matrix. So until I get to take the blue pill,
yeah.
Go down the rabbit hole. No, I'm living in the Matrix. Not brutal, just a bit inconsistent. We need to pick one setter, Lloyd Ball. Credit him.
Lloyd Ball.
Listen. Okay, maybe brutal is an overstatement. Both these guys have some talent. Kevin Hansen has not stepped up to the plate where he needs to be. There shouldn't be a discussion about who this number one setter is at this point. You shouldn't have Brian Thornton, who hadn't really played international matches with the senior team over the last three seasons, be able to step in and all of a sudden be declared the starter. If really things were getting done right, if players were developing at the rate you expected them to, that would not occur. And there is no clear division of who's the starter, who's not, who's taking on that role. And there was. When Lloyd was there and Kevin Hansen was a backup, Kevin Hansen did a fantastic job as a backup.
Yeah.
Fantastic job. But being a backup and being a starter are different.
Yeah.
We see it all the time with NFL football quarterbacks. Perfect comparison for a setter. Always the comparison that gets made. You see a great backup who then gets a chance to be a starter, and it's not quite the same. Kevin Hansen has not stepped into that role as the starter and established himself as the guy. And not to say he hasn't been working hard. It just hasn't happened. He hasn't been able to consistently deliver. And their transition attack has been subpar at best. They cannot connect with the middle right now at all, which is one of their biggest issues. And that's the setting again. You have two different guys coming in all the time. You have a couple different middles. You have some younger guys in there too. And if you can't have a middle attack, you can't be successful in today's game, today's international game.
At what point do you say we're going to go with this guy through the ups and downs? But it's hard as a coach because that's the position that you have to change when you're struggling.
Yeah, and it's hard to do. I mean, I saw it done with Loy and with Chip McCaw back around 1997 or 8.
Mm-hmm.
And they put in Loy and said, Loy's the guy. No discussion. Chip's the backup.
Yeah.
It killed Chip's fire. Killed it. And it creates a bunch of weird situations for the team, too, because anytime you do this with any player, and coaches have to do this at some point, right? You have a guy who's out there who's struggling. Everybody knows he's struggling, but he's still out there, and there's no change. And maybe you're changing other players who are struggling. So if it's not managed correctly, it can set up a bad dynamic between the players. You go, this guy's struggling like hell, and you're not taking him out. What's going on? You know, when you're young and dumb and 23 and know everything about everything, you don't understand the issues at hand of development and team dynamics and trying to establish a position and get pieces put in place for 3 years down the road, 2 years down the road, et cetera.
It's funny, we got Loy on this, and he was talking about losing confidence in the quick when things get tough. Said it happened to him in 96. You know, that's right around the time when you were talking about as well with him and Chip going back and forth.
No, it's afterwards. He's talking about back when he and Stork.
Oh, he and Stork were 96.
Were the guys in 96, yeah. Chip came after that. Chip was in the gym a little bit, but.
Who was the backup in 2000?
Chip.
Chip was the backup in 2000.
Chip McCaw out of Pepperdine.
National champion, 92.
Yep, as a freshman. True freshman. Yeah, it's a difficult situation when, yeah, you lose faith in the quick and you want to just throw it outside. And even with some pretty special outside hitters or opposites, eventually you're going to struggle.
Yeah.
And it took me a long time to understand that. I thought the 08 team really taught me that you, when you have a great middle attack, what it can really do for the team.
Yeah.
But you have to control the ball well enough. And I think the U.S. side, for the most part, controls the ball well enough. But even in an easy free ball opportunity, they cannot really establish that middle. Then they're trying to set this Bic offense over the top of an unestablished middle, and all the block does is wait and then block the Bic.
You know, one thing about that 08 team, watching them in the Olympics, was the pins were so great. I mean, Stanley and Reed and Riley and stuff, but D. Lee and Millar, and when Loy set them and the opportunities that they had were really the difference in that tournament. I mean, D. Lee, I knew how good he was, but I didn't know he was that good.
Nobody did. He was that good at that point. He was unbelievable.
You know, I just think if you're not confident set in the middle, you got to find someone who ride that guy who's the best at it, and let's get it going. Who would you like to see?
Would I like to see setting?
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you who Loy said, but I don't want you to look.
I already saw.
Okay.
I disagree with that. I wonder where Winder went. This isn't answering the question. I wonder where Winder went. Where did he go? Great college career, joined the national team, gone. Poof.
When I saw Winder in college that year, when they went to the Final Four, Irvine ended up winning, I think, their first national championship, but Pepperdine was number one. The Australian on the right.
Yep.
At that regional tournament at the Dine, I thought that kid was the guy that was going to follow Loy.
He
looked, and I'm not comparing him to Loy just because of the height, but he had those same things, the long ball out of system, the ability to set the middle, just that demeanor on the court. You know, I'd seen that kid grow up too. I remember coaching against him when he was in juniors at Balboa Bay. It surprised me that he didn't emerge as the guy.
He had two articles in the LA Times, the sports page.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know where he went. As far as the guys in the gym right now, I mean, Don Sujo has had injury issues. It was kind of Sujo and Hansen for a while. Sujo has injury issues. And you bring in Thornton, and I keep hearing what a great thinker Thornton is about the game. Tough competitor, some of those things. I'm not in the gym every day with him. I don't know. I only get to see what happens in the matches. I get to grade him on what happens in the matches. My man is 6'3", doesn't jump particularly well, and isn't particularly fast. So he's kind of behind the eight ball with those mm-hmm. physical attributes. Now, not to say you can't be a great setter. I think of great setters, the DiGiorgi brothers from Italy. Fantastic setters, all of 5'8". I think of Javier Weber out of Argentina. Fantastic international setter. He might be smaller than that. He might be 5'6". It's possible to be a great setter without height. But you better be a really good setter. You better put the ball on the money.
For me, as a coach, a former setter, I want my setter to understand the game, though, Barney. Like I wanted them to, above everything, be able to locate and know the flow of the game, when to set people, and have that extra, whether it's fire or demeanor or leadership, whatever it is, that player needs to be my quarterback. That player has to be Aaron Rodgers. That has to be Tom Brady.
It's a long time to develop.
I know, but that's what they need to be. So which guy in that group has the ability to be that? Because you don't have any 6'9 guys. You don't have Lloyd Ball out there. So who's going to dig that ball at 14-14 in the fifth? Who's going to put the ball in the money and want to be in that situation? Who's going to do that out of that group? That's what I want out of my setter. Who's going to make a play late?
Listen, it took Lloyd a long time to develop into that guy. Years and years. Hundreds of matches, professionally and
we don't have hundreds of matches.
No. We've got, I don't know, 20 left. That's why it's so strange that you have a situation where a Thornton walks in, essentially off the street, and all of a sudden is the starter. How can that happen? How can that happen?
Great face you just made.
Look at Lloyd. Long time. I'd like to. Lloyd and I are going to have a little heart to heart here on the show one day and just talk about it because I'm interested in.
You called him the worst big setting blocker of all time. You called him that on our show. You did, and it hurt him. He agreed and laughed at you.
Listen, I think it's very interesting to look back at the development of the players around you and yourself. And Loy and I, on this show, we should do it. We should sit down one time and just talk about that team from 97 to 2000 and from 2000 to 2004. I'm interested in his opinion of those teams. Obviously, coming at it from different places. And I'd like to hear Loy's opinion on the team in 96 that I don't know too much about. I only see the videotape of Jeff Nygaard missing a dig and Bob Stavrdlik standing over him screaming at him in the middle of the match.
Lloyd became the country's greatest setter of all the Olympics he's been to. But however good he became, when he got that ring finally, got that gold medal, that's what solidified him. So however long it took him to get there, or whatever the case is, once you win, like Peyton Manning finally won, when you win, you're solidified.
Volleyball Magazine's list of 35 best U.S. players of all time just out, brand new. January edition.
Beach and indoor, just indoor.
All time. Beach and everybody. Lloyd Ball, number 14. Great picture from Beijing with the American flag. Big smile.
He's not in the top 10?
This is a discussion we can have. This is great fodder right here. And you know, we're going to get back to college here in just a second.
Where's Dahlhauser?
Dahlhauser is in here. We're going to get to this right after. Dahlhauser's number 6.
Okay. Good, he's in the top 10.
Steve Timmons, number 8. Logan Thom, number 5. I wonder how Lloyd feels about Logan being 5, him being 14.
He went to 4 Olympics?
4.
Put him in the top 10 right now.
One gold medal, one
fourth. I'm going to throw that magazine in the trash unless you put him in the top 10. Like immediately, they're better than edit.
Okay.
What are you upset about? Number 1 is correct.
Yes. No debate.
Okay, good.
No debate. But I said that with Jared because always the solution is any problem. It could be we can't get sponsorship for balls in the gym. God, I wish Karch was here. Jesus, the Gatorade isn't made right. It tastes like crap. Well, I wish Karch was here. Always. All right.
As it should be.
All right. We're going to get back to that list in just a second because we're going to end the show with that list. You, me, we're going to debate it out. We're going to keep Lloyd Ball on the chat board, I hope. You know, it's late there in Russia.
14 Euro titles. I love that little blast right there.
He's won more European championships. It's unbelievable. All right. So I believe we have in our midst another coach that agreed to join us as he gets ready to lead his team into the first round of the NCAA championship. He had to travel this year. Kelly Sheffield of Dayton. Kelly.
How's it going, guys?
Hey, thanks for calling in. We're just guessing here on the chat board. Glad you're with us. You're going down there to Texas A&M. TCU, Kentucky, Lipscomb, and Texas A&M this weekend. How do you feel about your first-round matchup with Kentucky?
I think it's probably a pretty tough draw for quite a few of us. I'm sure that's been a common theme from a lot of people. But I'm not sure that, we find out on Sunday night where we're playing, where we're going. And then Texas A&M, there's a few sites that choose to play on Thursday, which means that we're leaving on Tuesday. So you're trying to make all those travel arrangements in one day, trying to prepare your team in one day for a flight out basically 48 hours after or less than that after you find out. I think that's a huge advantage for the home team. So I think that's something we probably need to address, is that I think you're seeing more and more teams that are choosing to play on Thursday because it's such a huge advantage for the home team that maybe the committee needs to take a look and say, all right, you need to be playing on Friday rather than that Thursday time slot. You know, we had a choice of taking a 14-hour trip yesterday to get here from Dayton to surprisingly, there's no direct flights from Dayton to College Station. And so we had a 14-hour trip where we had a charter for $37,000. So that was our choice that we had to make yesterday. That's a tough decision.
Yeah, but, talking about the economic viability of the tournament, that's a rough one.
That is a rough one. But, you know, I'll tell you what, I think this sub-regional is probably as wide open as any of them. I mean, it's going to be great volleyball. I think there's four teams that are coming in playing some great volleyball, and I think there's probably not a whole lot that separates any of the four from each other. So it should be a really good couple days.
You know, Coach, some people are saying you and Kentucky, and I've read this on a lot of message boards and articles, and it's on our message board as well, that is one of the premier first-round matchups.
Well, it could be. I mean, I think we played each other a little bit in the spring and, a little scrimmage down there at their place at a coach's clinic, and it was a battle then. They're really tough defensively. They've got some size up in the front row. They obviously got a whole lot better as the season went on. I'm not sure there's a team that improved as much from the beginning of the season to the end of the season as the Kentucky Wildcats did. They're very well coached, and but I think we're coming in with a lot of confidence as well and playing some pretty good volleyball. Certainly on paper, it should be a match that can go for a while.
How is anybody going to deal with Lipscomb and Brandon Rosenthal?
I don't think you deal with him whatsoever. I mean, we had our coaches meeting this morning here on campus. By the way, their loading dock is bigger than the University of Dayton campus here. It's incredible. You know, he's already complaining about lack of music at the practice sessions and everything else. So, you know, he's got everybody up in arms down here already.
Coach, one last question before we let you go. Kind of quick hits here. Your team traveling down, you mentioned having to play on a Thursday, having to rush down. How much is it about your team then and what you can do on your side, since you don't really have time to prepare for them? And what can we expect to see from your side during that match?
I think a lot of it is about, is your team ready to play your game? There's obviously some scouting that goes involved, but a big portion of what we've spent the past few days is just trying to, we talked about tightening the screws, focusing a little bit on what we do, maybe serve a little bit tougher, tighten up the block a little bit defensively, know what we're trying to do. I think a big portion of it is with all of us in the tournament, is trying to do what you do good.
Control your side of the net. Love it. Kelly Sheffield of Dayton, thanks for calling in. Appreciate it. Good luck this weekend.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
See ya. All right. Coach number one. Now, coach number two, moving right on down the line. Trying to get the area codes right here, Geeter. Just trying to get the area codes right. It's the only way we do business here. Trying to figure out where's... This is good radio, right? We move on to a friend of the program, someone we've spoken to many times on the show. Look forward to seeing at the AVCA convention. Maybe we'll co-host another event. Maybe she'll award us our Grant Berger Award this year. Ann Cortez of Louisville.
Ann, how are we doing, guys?
Hey, we're doing good. We're putting together a show on a shoestring budget here. Geeter's just sitting on the computer. He's not even paying attention right now.
Yes,
but we want to
talk. Dropped the computer because Ann came on.
Listen, guys, I tried to pay you to come do a Net Live show here in Louisville. I mean, I don't know what else I can do for you except, you know, try to give you business.
You have. Know? That's right. But, and we have failed you. It's been well documented. And we'll
just kidding. I'm teasing. It's going to be even better for next year. We're looking forward to it.
All right, so your team, tell us about your year. Seemed like you kind of jump into the fire first year with Louisville, but make the tournament. That's a good result.
Yeah, no, we're very excited about it. Actually, we're excited for to get three Big East teams in, really. And it's been a strong year for us. We came in with we don't have any freshmen, and we lost a player to an overseas contract right away, and then we lost another player to an injury. And this is nothing that anybody else doesn't have to deal with. Everybody's got their different hurdles they have to get over, and ours was lack of depth. The good thing on that part is the simple fact that you got what you have. You know, you got what you got, so you look, there doesn't have to be a whole bunch of, I don't have to be a genius coach to know, like, this girl can only play here, so, hey, that takes a little bit of the pressure off, and we just have to go and play hard. I think that we become a team to scout, but I think, that's not what it's all about. If a team could scout us out pretty well, that's fine. They know where we're going to go and they know what we have to do. But then if we can just play hard, we can play tough, we can play aggressive. I think we can be in the mix with anyone. But I also think we can be a team that, we can, we've proven that we can be a team that is very beatable as well. So.
And how has your first year been going there?
It's amazing. Yeah, I really couldn't say more about, just how excited and what Louisville does for their athletes. It's just unbelievable. And, we get treated so unbelievably well here. And not just that, but we moved all of our matches downtown to this Yum Arena, which is brand new arena for women's and men's basketball. And they put volleyball in there. And it's state of the art. We call it Las Vegas with a volleyball court or a basketball court in the middle of it. That's what it looks like. It's gorgeous. And, we were talking about that, we were moving out of our old arena because we sold out. We sold out, and we couldn't put any more. We couldn't grow. And to go downtown, we were able to jump up in, the top 25 for attendance, and fans got behind this team, win or lose. So, we just have a lot to build on here. The foundation is very, very strong. We're fired up.
Hey, and I got to ask you this because there's a lot of talk about it. Maybe you can shed some light. There was no final ABCA poll.
Right, yes. I can't shed any light, only for a couple reasons. I don't know, and that's the honest answer. And I'm going in as president, president-elect right now, but I'm also not an ABCA voter, and so I don't know if there was any discussion on why or what that is. But if you can give me a week or two, I'll find that answer for your listeners.
Oh, well, we'll be talking.
Unless you figure it out today, somebody might have that answer for you, but I don't know why.
I got the answer because it doesn't matter. Nobody pays attention.
Well, I think it's always something. It definitely matters. And I'll tell you where it matters. It matters, if anything, I'll tell you what, it matters to the kids. It matters to players. If you're an athlete and you're going in day after day and you're busting it and you're talking about, hey, we get this one or that one, as coaches, we understand, hey, this isn't as important. We gotta put a good resume together. We understand what we need to do to advance in the NCAA tournament. But for kids, You tell me right now, if you asked a kid where they were in the RPI, most of them, they're not going to know what that is as compared to, gosh, we're in the top 25. And that's the thing that people are going to talk about once they're finished. Like, hey, we got this program in the top 25. We broke into the top 10 for the first time. Or, Western Kentucky right now, this is a perfect example. They busted in the top 25 the first time in program history. And they probably have an amazing RPI. I can't say, know where it is right now offhand. But I guarantee none of those kids care as much about that as, getting ranked 23rd, 24th in the ABCA poll last week. So.
Right. Right. All right. So let's talk about your pot over there. You have Louisville, Ball State. That's your matchup. Then Morehead State and Purdue. You'll get the winner of that. Tell us a little bit about your matchup.
Battle
Ball
of Cardinal.
State.
What's that? It's a battle. It's the Sean Bell sandwich over in this part of the area. But I'm excited, actually. I text Dave Shondell and congratulate him on Big Ten Coach of the Year and asked him if he wouldn't mind if I asked Daddy Don Shondell to sit on my bench. So I feel like everybody needs a Shondell on their bench this weekend, possibly. But it's going to be a great weekend. I'm excited for the MAC, unbelievable opportunity for four of their schools to get in, and I think, you know, they've got to take, you know, they're excited to take advantage of it. And great job for Steve Shondell getting Ball State back into the NCAA tournament. I mean, they've got a, you know, a 6'4 middle and a 6'4 right side, so they can put up a pretty big block on you. And they got some nice athletes. If you look at their roster, you know, they're have a lot of kids that have played elsewhere and come in there. You know, it's almost like a, you know, it's like this is a place where there's a lot of kids looking for that second chance, didn't find maybe happiness or just didn't work out for them at the first school. And I think sometimes when you get kids like that together, it's dangerous because they're thinking, you know, maybe I thought my first place or whatever, I didn't get as much out of it as I wanted. I'm going to make it happen here. And I think that's the kind of team this is. They're very scrappy. I mean, I think that's just the mentality of, you know, Muncie kids, you know, people that are from that area. You know, they work for what they want and they go out and get it. So I think it's going to be a really, really good match. And I'm excited to play them. And we haven't honestly thought too much about Purdue at all because all eyes are right now on Ball State. But the Purdue-Moorhead game is going to be great. We just played Moorhead last weekend. Jamie Gordon is doing a phenomenal job there. And those kids play with a ton of heart, you know. So it's going to be a good weekend.
And we wish you the best of luck. Thanks for talking to
Thank
us. We'll
you.
Look forward to talking to you
Appreciate
at the ABC.
Guys. See you all See soon.
All right.
Bye, Ann.
Bye, Ann.
All right.
All right. Ann Cordes. Next up, we have a man from Tennessee. Been on this program a couple of times, Rob Patrick. As the
What's
Tennessee
happening?
Enter the tournament. Rob,
What's up,
thanks
Coach?
For hanging in there. We're running a little bit behind. Tell us about the end of the season for your team, as you are the number 14 seed. You'll face off with Duke here in the first round.
Yeah, you know, it's we had a good finish to the season. You know, I really thought, you know, we're so young, we're starting basically four freshmen and two sophomores for most of the time, and throwing a junior here and there for a couple of rotations. But I thought we're going to lose our legs and kind of, you know, be a little bit dead by this time of the season, since those, you know, freshmen don't really have the strength base. But I was really surprised. They proved me wrong, and they were able to come out there and play, you know, very high-level volleyball against some of the very top teams in the SEC. We played Kentucky the last match of the season. We played LSU and Arkansas, right before that, and those two were playing for the Western Division Championship in the SEC. So, and we were able to, you know, be successful in those matches. So I feel real good about where we're at with our team. And then, you know, we play a very, very good Duke team. You know, you got, you know, basically four seniors, three seniors, and a couple juniors on the court most of the time for them. They played in the Elite Eight last year. But it's, you know, kind of the same thing that we have to face every single match we play. We're going to play teams that have way more experience than us just because of how young we are. But, you know, they're big, they're physical. They run a great offense. They've had a four-year starting setter, you know, running the show for them. And they've been there before. So, you know, the huge positive is we get to play at home, and we're 13-0 at home this year, and won some big matches against Kentucky and Florida Dayton. We played Dayton in Illinois, who's a great team, and you know, so we've played some good teams at home, and we've been real successful there. So, you know, we're excited about it for sure.
Coach, if you can just kind of reflect on this season in the Southeast Conference and that 19-1 record and winning it, and it's a conference that really Florida has and Mary Weiss have dominated over the last 20 years. What did it mean for your program to win it outright and to beat Florida twice?
Well, it was huge. You know, the first thing is to, you know, they have been the benchmark. You've been exactly right. And they've been the benchmark for a couple reasons. Number one, obviously, they're very well coached. You know, they do a great job down there. You don't win that many matches just because you have talent. You have to be a good coach to be able to do that. And she's done that at the highest level for many, many years. But they also will have some of the very best players in the conference every year in and year out. And what I think has happened in the SEC in general is other teams have been able to recruit at least athletes, maybe not all the time the volleyball player, but at least athletes that can start matching up with the best players in the conference that Florida has. And that's what we've been able to do. We've been able to bring in some players that are as athletic as Florida, but also now we're getting some kids like a Tiffany Baker, like a Kelsey Robinson, who also are great volleyball players. And we really hadn't had that before, you know. And we had to, you know, kind of, you know, coax them through being, you know, a great athlete and try and put them in situations that they're going to be successful. And that, it's not just at Tennessee, but it's right down the line. Look what Kentucky's done. LSU has done a great job, you know. So the conference itself has really taken a huge step up in the last 4 or 5 years. This year, I maybe consider a little bit of a down year in terms of some of the wins, or maybe the wins we didn't get by some of the teams. But, the top teams in the conference did a great job, I thought, out of conference and getting some big wins. And it was a huge deal here at the University of Tennessee to win it outright. We actually won the conference the second last match of the year. We beat LSU, and we knew we had at least a share for the conference title. And what was really neat is our players celebrated like we just won a match, and that was it. They didn't want to share it, and we knew Kentucky, we beat us in 5 at their place in a great volleyball match. And so our team wanted to really be able to just not share that title with someone. And they really focused in and playing at home, and we had a great crowd. We broke our attendance record here for the 4th year in a row, and Kentucky came in and played really well. And it was just, a really high-level volleyball match that, we were able to win, and it meant a great deal. That's when the celebration really started. And to be able to have those type of matches in the SEC really has helped not only us but Kentucky and Florida prepare for the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, we talked to Craig Skinner right before you guys played. He had the NetLive interview appearance going on his side, but it's only good for one match when they were able to defeat you, and I think they lost their match right after that.
I'm glad you didn't have them on right before the other match then.
Yeah. Well, we're only good for one. We're a guaranteed one win, one loss once you're on this program. So,
All right.
Second round, you'll go through the first, but good luck in the second.
Okay. Well, hey, I don't have to worry about the first round now, huh?
That's right. You're all set. Hey, we just had Kelly Sheffield on here, and he was talking about the advantage of playing on Thursday for the home teams. You are a home team and choosing to play on Thursday. Did you guys choose that as a tactical advantage, or are you going to lay it off on scheduling?
I'll lay it off on scheduling.
Okay.
Obviously, I'm never going to sit there and think that I'm that smart to be able to figure out tactically what's good and what's bad, and I think a lot of my colleagues will agree with that statement. I'm going to put it off on scheduling. But, we have a basketball game on Saturday. Our administration has been absolutely fantastic to really push to be able to host on that Thursday, Friday. And I'll tell you, last year we had a very, very good team, and we weren't able to host last year, and they wanted us to host. We couldn't put in a bid because of an event here. And we went up to Indiana, where Indiana had beaten Penn State. They went like maybe 12-1 at home, and our administration went up with us to that match, obviously, and watched. It was a really great volleyball match, lost in 5, and it was because of Indiana had just had a great crowd, and it was the difference in the match. And they saw that, and they realized they always want to give us the best opportunity to be successful, and they realized that playing at home in the NCAA tournament in volleyball was a huge deal. And so they made sure as best they could to be able to host.
Now, Coach, back in, 2005, you guys made that run to the national semifinals. That was you and Santa Clara, correct?
2005, that's right.
Yeah, so yep. That was the year you and Santa Clara got there, I believe, Nebraska and Washington. Washington ended up winning the national championship. I remember that year specifically for you and John Wallace and Santa Clara getting to that Final Four. When you look at this bracket in the parity right now in women's college volleyball, is this the kind of year where a team like you guys were back then can get in?
Absolutely. I absolutely agree. I'd say if we were in the Hawaii bracket, I don't know if that I'd be answering it that way. Obviously. But you hit all the points exactly right. The parity is number one in the country. When you have teams like, Northern Iowa and Western Kentucky and some great teams, just all these what you consider mid-major type schools who have had some, success against BCS type schools. That's number one. And the number two, just the way the brackets have been laid out, there are some opportunities to advance and for some of the non-traditional powers to advance, and that's going to be exciting. Yeah, that's going to be exciting. I don't totally agree with the way they seeded put the tournament together. But now that it's been put together, I'm a half full glass guy type guy. I always look for the positive, and it's like, hey, this might be good for volleyball. The one thing that happened when Santa Clara and us made it to the NCAA tournament and made it to the Final Four in 05, I feel, is that it opened people's eyes to say, gosh, if Tennessee can do it, if Santa Clara can do it, we can do it too. And I think it gave people a lot of hope and even gave them more energy that that they could actually make it to a Final Four and not be Nebraska and USC and Stanford. And I was talking to Rich Feller at Cal, and that was one of the things that they kind of, when the first time they went to the Final Four a few years ago, was they kind of hung on that, hey, Tennessee can do it, why can't we? And I think it just opened up some doors and the minds of some programs that they can make it to the Final Four, and I think, you know, that's good for volleyball.
Rob Patrick, thanks a lot for joining us. We appreciate it. Good luck as your
thanks
team
a lot, guys.
First round with Duke. Appreciate it. All right, Rob Patrick. We are going fast here, Geeter.
Flying.
So fast I can't even move computer screens correctly.
Yeah, Loy and I are starting to just heckle you.
Hey, here's the curse of TNL. Okay, Florida State, 15-match winning streak, goes out, wins the next one, loses the following match. Kentucky beats Tennessee, loses the following match.
Uh-huh.
So if you're USC, Louisville, Texas, Purdue, Lipscomb, Tennessee, or Dayton, you're
guaranteed
good.
First round winners.
You're good. Second round? I don't know.
Barney, coaches are going to run. Run for the hills.
Well, hey, this one can't run because he's been on the line waiting for a while patiently, and we appreciate it. It's part of the Midwest Volleyball Mafia against stealing from Loy. Welcome to the program once again, Dave Shondell of Purdue.
Yes.
Thanks, guys. My pleasure.
Welcome in, Coach.
Coach, it's Geeter. Listen, I've been watching you all year on the Big Ten Network. I love what you have going on there. I've been talking about you guys all year on this show. I can't have you as the 5 seed because you're supposed to be my sleeper team.
Yeah, I wish we were a little bit lower seated. I hate guys like you putting us out in the limb. Karch did the same thing on the show, and we like to kind of just hide in the weeds a little bit more.
Well, you know I can't do that. You know, I'm watching these games on Wednesday nights and Tuesday nights, and I love the atmosphere that you guys have at your home arena in West Lafayette. Talk about just how the students in the community have gotten behind the sport of women's volleyball.
Well, it's been one of the most exciting things that I've seen since I've been here. This is our 9th season, and we first got started. We got this group of guys from one of the dorms to kind of start following us, and it's just grown to where, you know, we'll have 500 or 750 guys in that end zone every night. And they just love it, and we do a lot of things to support those guys. We'll have some cookouts with them. We'll invite them over to the gym for some play nights and different things like that. But it's a great relationship, but it certainly has, I think, established the best student crowd in the Big Ten.
Yeah, without a doubt. Congratulations, too, on Co-Coach of the Year out there in the Big Ten. I know that means a lot to you and your players because that means you guys are doing something right.
Well, you know, we've made some progress, and I've got a great coaching staff. And the one thing that anybody knows me will tell you that I'm pretty good at surrounding myself with really good people. And between my brother John, who's been my assistant for 9 years, and Kathy Jewell, who's also been here for 9 years, we've got a great staff and good people. And just like Rob was saying, you know, these schools in some of these major conferences and other conferences really are supporting volleyball. And the Big Ten, you can't go anywhere in the Big Ten anymore and not find anywhere between 2,000 and 6,000 fans at the matches. So it's been a lot of fun.
Now, Coach, talk about some of the keys that are going to be for your team. I know you guys got close last year. You played Texas in a great match. And when I watched that match, I saw you guys just serve the lights out. Talk about what kind of team you are and what are some of the strengths here going into this tournament.
Well, Geeter, I think we've always, tried to build our team around serving, passing, and defense. There's going to be some years you're not going to have the kids touching 10-3, 10-4, and especially when we first got here. So we've always kind of based, maybe that's because of the Muncie-Anna background, but we're going to serve, pass, and play defense, and those are the things that we're going to spend a lot of time on and take a lot of pride in also. But certainly this year with the emergence of Ariel Turner, who was the Big Ten Player of the Year, she gives us certainly a tremendous weapon on the outside. We've got a middle whose name is Tiffany Fisher, who was a unanimous pick for all Big Ten, led the league in hitting percentage, goes off 1 foot very, very well. And then we have a freshman who came out of the Muncie-Anna program, was one of their top players. It's just a real high flyer, only about 6 foot half inch, but touches about 10-5. And they give us some solidity in the middle as well. Another freshman on the outside named Val Nickel, who is another big jumper that's a great athlete. And then we have kind of an X factor on the right side, a kid out of Mobile, Alabama, of all places, named Catherine Rybarczyk. And Rybarczyk has kind of been in a little bit of a funk here late in the season. And my prediction is that she's just waiting for the tournament to explode on some people because she's been unbelievable in practice, but we just haven't seen it in a match lately.
Coach, I want to ask you, on the 19th, you guys lost to Penn State 3-1. Is this the year they finally go down? Is somebody going to pick them off?
I wouldn't bet on it. they're playing better and better, and they have a history of playing pretty well in the NCAA tournament. They were as good as anybody we've seen all year when we played them at their place. That was the only loss we had in the last 14 matches. It was at Penn State, and I think Rest had a lot of ammunition. It was senior night. We were ranked ahead of them for the first time in the history of volleyball, and we were ahead of them in the standings, and I knew that they were going to be ready to play, and they were. The most dangerous thing they have, Barney, is they've got some great jump servers. The Hancock kid was sent from God to Russ. They wouldn't be anywhere where they are right now without Hancock. She was freshman of the year in the Big Ten, and she's just doing a lot of great things for them right now. And they brought Carpenter in to do some jump serving. She'd been jump floating almost all season, and they unloaded the jump serve on us, and it was very, very effective. And they're the team, when they walk in the gym, I think they and Texas, when those two teams walk in the gym, everybody's going to turn their head and say, "You got to be kidding me." They're that kind of a physical presence. So you got to get past that first. But they don't handle the ball real well, and that's been their downfall, is nights when their passing has just gone out the window. But they're playing very, very well right now, and I would not want to run into them in the bracket.
Coach, you mentioned the jump-serving aspect of Penn State, and we've seen that for a little while with them, and it seems like the evolution of the game is going that way, although, in my opinion, not quite enough. You've been in the game so long, and you mentioned the focus you have on serving. Is the jump serve something that's finally coming into vogue for women's volleyball, and why hasn't it been a bigger force up to this point?
I just think it takes a special arm, a special athlete to be able to get enough on the ball. I remember talking with Jimmy Mack probably back in 2006 in the airport, the year he won his first national championship, and he's more of a scientific guy than I am, but he was giving me the radar gun numbers that it took for a player to be really successful on that jump serve. And most female athletes at the college level can't bring it in that fashion. And I think that's the reason why a lot of people have just gone with the jump float. We've got a kid that can bring it that way, but she brings it out the back door half the time and makes a lot of service errors. But Hancock is the best I've ever seen at the college level. She was just born to jump serve. She must have been a hell of a softball player in her day, because she can bring it. But I think the reason is there just aren't enough athletes that can really do that. And the other thing is, the same athlete that's going to be a great jump server is the kid you're going to be setting 50 times a night. And you can only, jump and swing so many times during a week. And so I think a lot of coaches look at that and say, I can't have that kid, jump serving every ball. Stacey Gordon, who was the co-player of the year with Agana Namani several years ago, was somebody that could do it all. And she jump served rockets. But actually, Hancock serves the ball tougher than what Gordon did.
Now, Barney, I have to jump in. Barney, I said Coach was co-coach of the year. I did not mean that. He was the sole coach of the year.
Yeah.
I cannot take half the credit away from him. He was the coach of the year in the Big Ten. Coach, I apologize for that. Quickly, a question from our listener. Do you wish the Big Ten, or should the Big Ten, have a Libero of the Year award?
Well, I was a little surprised this year that the Defensive Player of the Year went to a middle blocker, and a well-deserved honor for Katie Slay. I mean, she's a huge presence at the net, but In most leagues, I think the Defensive Player of the Year just naturally goes to a libero or some kind of a defensive player in the backcourt. And this year it just went the other way, and it left a lot of great ball control players out of the mix. And I could see that award, maybe a name change to libero of the year. That
yeah.
might help a little bit. I think Slay made the All Big Ten team, and she got her due. But we didn't have a defensive player on the All Big Ten team this year, and that was a little bit odd. But the Granquist kid out of Minneapolis, plays for Minnesota, terrific defensive player. Beltran from Illinois, another great defensive player. Caitlin Cox from IU, all were deserving, I thought, of maybe winning that award.
And, Coach, Loy Ball is on our message board. He calls your father the the godfather of volleyball,
yeah.
And also said you were the most biased, biased announcer in the history of Baltimore.
I think anybody could appreciate it be you. I remember working the PA when Loy was playing. I'd be calling out the front row hitters and what shot they hit the last time that they came up in the front row. I think Arnie actually filed a complaint one time with the MIVA.
But
Loy was just talking about a guy coming in and changing a program. I think Arnie went about 50 matches in a row without beating Ball State, and finally he found a 6'9" son to come in and turn the tide against the Cardinals. But what a change he's made! And tell Loy we're happy that Brian Cardinal, one of his running mates, is back on campus here at Purdue for a while until the NBA gets started again. Brian's going to be doing some work here at Purdue.
And Coach, how about Steve and the job he's been able to do and how fun that's going to be for the family?
Well, you know, Steve is a guy that just worries about everything, and he was afraid that, you know, last year they won the MAC, he had a storybook season, and they go in, they get beat in the quarterfinals of the tournament, and he's out, watching the rest of the tournament and doesn't make the NCAA tournament. And so he's been sweating bullets for the last 12 months, hoping that they could get in this year. And so I was thrilled that he did. And I was happy for the MAC. If you follow sports around the Midwest, you know the MAC gets treated like the redhead stepchild of the NCAA. Yeah. You know, they never get two teams in any NCAA tournament. So, I give them credit for figuring out a way to get four teams in. You know, I know that you've had some coaches. Question that, and I think, you know what, here's the system. You know, you got to play the system. You don't wait till the draw comes out and then complain about it. There's a system. There's a way to play the system. That committee does not have the means to evaluate teams. I mean, it's not like NCAA men's basketball where they're paying a group of people all year long to evaluate teams. This is a group of a dozen people they throw in a room for 2 days, and they say, give us your tournament. That's not their fault. That's just where we stack up now in the eyes of the NCAA, and they have to have a basis to evaluate, and that basis is the RPI. It's not what they see on TV three nights during the month. It's what they can go back and say, this is why we did this. And so USC, who probably is one of the top three teams in the country, is not seated where Mick thinks they should be, but it's all because they've got to have some basis, and that basis is called the RPI.
Coach, in the second round, if you get your brother, what are you going to be able to do to get in his head? How are you going to mess with him before the match starts?
Oh, you know what? If you know the history, in high school, which is where Steve and I spent most of our coaching careers, as Mick would say, he beat the ears off of us, okay, year after year. And so, you know, we owe him a lot. Both John, my younger brother, and I, we owe him plenty for all the times he beat us in high school. So there won't have to be a lot to get into. We've got a pretty good ball club, and he's got a nice team as well. But playing here at home, that's such a huge benefit. And I'm so happy that they did that. They gave the top 16 seeds the opportunity to play at home. I think that's a great advantage to those teams who have worked hard all season to earn that. And I just want to piggyback on what I think it was Sheffield or maybe, yeah, Sheff made that comment. It is a major unfair advantage to teams to host on Thursday of this tournament.
Yeah,
that to me, you know, you can talk about the RPI and how they do that, but, you know, there's going to be beefs in NCAA basketball. There's always people that don't like the draw. But what is unfair is to have these teams find out Sunday night that they're going to play and, you know, somewhere on Thursday, and that gives that home team a huge advantage. If I was smart, we'd have put our bid in for Thursday, because now you know if you're a top 16 seed, you're going to host no matter what date you turn in, and that's something that the committee has to look at. That has to be Friday and Saturday, as John Cook would say. Let's play like the big boys do. Let's make sure everybody plays on Friday and Saturday, and not give anybody that unfair advantage.
Right on, Coach. Thanks for being here. Wish you luck against Morehead State.
Okay, well, we'll need it. They're going to be a scrappy ball club. Those kids from the Louisville area, as Geeter would know, they come out of that Kiva club, and they know how to fight and claw, and it'll be a competitive match.
Absolutely. Hey, Coach, can't wait to talk to you in a couple weeks.
Okay, guys. Thank you.
Thank you. He's great.
Yeah.
How about they brought it up on the board, too. He's all, we were talking about bias announcing. He's like, Geeter, nobody knows more than you. A little jab. I'm like, is he talking USA, China, and the gold? Or
I always used to enjoy when I got up to go see the Bulls in Milwaukee a couple of times.
Yeah.
And you hear, Jack Sigma!
That's pretty good, by the way.
And then Michael Jordan.
That was awesome that he would be, that he was calling out the front row guys.
I love it. I love it. I love the fact that it's big enough time to have those sorts of rivalries, to have
awesome
that sort of discussion going on.
What a great group of four coaches right there. I mean, you talk about some characters in that group, the Shondell brothers,
Morehead
State,
Sheffield.
Coach, and Ann Cortis.
Yeah. Well, and you talk about Kiva, that's Ann Cortis' father running that Kiva club. Put those kids into Morehead State.
You and I would vote Ann the best looking in that group.
No doubt. All right, more to come here on the Net Live. A possible fist fight between Barnett and Ball. Should be good. Hang in there. Much more to come. Geeter and Barnett holding down the home court on a Wednesday.
As the ABCA convention draws closer, it continues to be the place where the stars of volleyball connect. On December 16th at 8 p.m. Eastern, San Antonio's Alamo Dome will light up as the top 24 seniors of girls high school volleyball will take the court in the 2011 Under Armour All-American Match and Skills Competition. Admission is complimentary to convention attendees, and tickets will be available for under $15 at both Ticketmaster.com and the Alamo Dome box office. The match will air on ESPNU on December 26th at 7 p.m. Eastern. Support the future stars of the sport and make plans to watch or attend this exciting event.
Clear eyes, full heart, can't lose, baby.
Can't lose, buddy.
The Net Live. It's a great show. If you haven't watched Friday Night Lights, you haven't experienced one of the best TV programs that have been out there.
You and I are confused on Volley Talk. We just checked. It said, can't wait to hear Sheffield. He will put Geeter on his ear.
Yeah, on his ear, I think it's like off balance. I don't know. It's a colloquialism that I'm not that familiar with.
He really didn't.
I don't know. He was good.
Yeah, he's fine.
He wasn't that angry with you.
Why would he be angry with me?
I don't know. You tell me.
I have no clue.
There's people out there maybe looking at you.
Oh, because he didn't treat a former setter of mine well, but that's none of my, I mean, it's none of my business.
All right, once you release him into the wild.
Yeah, sure, to UOP, and he's having a great career, and his team's fine. I don't care.
Hey, big thanks to Mick Haley, Jared Elliott, who has the most double letters in his name that I've ever seen. J-E-R-R-I-T-T-E-L-L-I-O-T-T. Ann Cortez, Dave Shondell, Kelly Sheffield, Rob Patrick, all on the program
Mick
today.
Haley.
Mick Haley. Did I mention Mick?
And Lloyd Ball might as well have been on the program today.
He is really as much on the program without speaking on the program as he could possibly be. Finally got in on the chat board. Wants to have a brawl to end it all. Barnett and Ball going at it. I got to pick Lloyd in that right now. I'll fight dirty, but I think he's still playing, better physical condition. I will.
Big bank take little bank, he wins that.
You will see two guys both going after the knees, though.
Yeah.
The immediate weak spot. But I wanted to finish up, before we check out, I wanted to finish up on the discussion of the men's team, because we got to the setter issue. The setter's a big problem. My take on their team right now is, in this tournament, they could beat anybody, and they can lose to anybody. Because they've absolutely got the talent on their side to be good. To beat Brazil, to beat Russia when it matters. It can happen. But they're not consistent. You never know what team you're going to get. That same team could go out, could beat Brazil, then the very next match out could lose to almost anybody. Not quite Egypt and Iran, but certainly a Serbia or a Poland. Poland right now leading the World Cup standings, having a great tournament, kind of back to where they were expected to be.
Were you doing play-by-play on these matches?
No, I'm doing color.
Paul doing play-by-play?
You got it.
You should try to get me in there so then when we talk about these things, I know what you're talking about with the matches.
Your name's been thrown around.
Oh, thanks. Appreciate that.
When Sunday's unavailable. Throw my own name out there when Sunday's unavailable.
I figured you were doing that.
Hey, you got to take care of myself.
Real quick, who wins? You and Loy in a fight? For sure, Loy?
No, I'm going to pick myself this time. I thought about it for the last couple of minutes. Yeah.
Not in a motocross race.
Dang it. Well, he's from Indiana. He might have gotten on a dirt bike once in a while. They're country. Anyway, the men's team, I think the men's team is going to face a situation where they're going to finish sixth or so, plus or minus one position in the World Cup, which would be behind where they've been the last few World Cups. They have finished fourth just out of qualifying. They're not going to qualify. They're going to have to go to Noriega's own championship. And what's worse for them is I don't know that Cuba is going to qualify. I don't think Cuba is going to get out either. And so it'll be Cuba and the United States in the zone championships. And that will be a dogfight. Cuba, young, physical, as usual, can get hot. The United States beat them in 5 in 2003 in order to the right to go to the 2004 games. Really a tough situation for the Americans. If they don't win there, they're going to have to go to one of three tournaments and win one of those tournaments. And I think the FIVB will take care of them and will give them a good seed and a good tournament and a good draw. But you still have to go to a tournament and get it done, and that's going to be around June. That's going to be pretty rough.
Do you want my final four picks?
Yeah, let's do it.
I got Texas, Purdue, Illinois, and USC in the final four.
Texas, Purdue, USC,
and Illinois.
Illinois.
In the final four.
Illinois, a team that it was hot early, but kind of cooled off a little bit, huh?
But if Penn State wins the championship?
If Penn State makes the final four.
I won't be surprised.
If Penn State makes the final four,
even
you have to pick
them. Even
they're
not supposed to, finally.
Well, they weren't supposed to make it last year.
I know.
So if they make the final four, you have to just pick them to win the championship. It would be foolish not to.
I'm actually picking them to lose.
I'm going to pick. Who are they going to lose to?
I think they beat UCLA. Unless Sealy can come up some magic. I say that because I know UCLA hasn't been playing their best lately. And I know they're going through some changes over there, running 6-2, 5-1. So I'm sure Mike and Joy and those guys will figure it out. But I think Texas. Texas beat them earlier this year, 15-13 in the fifth, I believe. So I'd have to take Texas if they met in the Elite Eight.
I'm not sure what to do about the Minneapolis side of the bracket. That's the one that mystifies me as far as getting to a Final Four. Because I like Texas. I like Illinois. I like Nebraska coming out of the Hawaii side. But I'm not sure what to do with this other one. You have Purdue, Louisville, Minnesota, Florida State, Samford, Milwaukee.
Yeah, you know,
I'm going to get by Iowa State.
I pick USC, but Nebraska is a team that could win the whole thing.
Yeah, I think Nebraska's good.
Very well. I actually think it's going to be SC playing Nebraska in that Elite Eight game. I think that bracket's going to be SC versus Hawaii. I think it's going to be Pep versus Nebraska. I think Pep's going to beat Cal. I think Nebraska will beat Pep. And then SC's going to play Nebraska, and it's going to go 5, and it's going to be 15-12 in the fifth.
I just feel like Pep is one player short of really taking the next step.
Who?
Pep. I feel like they just kind of need one more player.
Yeah.
Frederick is a great player. He's fun to watch. But they need someone else.
They've had a great year this year. They scheduled tough. They have some big wins. And I think it's going to pay off because I think they're going to beat Cal.
Maybe they need a better assistant coach. Maybe that would do it. Could train somebody up. Marcio and somebody.
Oh. Wow.
I don't know who would be in there. When has Pepperdine ever done anything? Oh, boy. Haters. Haters.
Yeah. Had fun.
Hey, thanks for coming in. And a big thanks to Volleyball Magazine. Big thanks to the AVCA. We didn't have College Volleyball Weekly this week, but it will make a return next week. Next week's show, looking like it's going to be a little bit early on Monday. Have you guys in here on the home court, you and Jay Hossack, hopefully somebody else to run the computer and deal with the computer issues. We'll have you in here. Vala Clothing, VALAclothing.com is where you can order your NetLive t-shirts, and that's a support of our show. We appreciate you doing that. The NetLive@gmail.com is another place that you can go and interact. And then Facebook.com/TheNetLive.
You know what's hard about picking this bracket?
Tell me.
My final thought, and Mick mentioned this to me when we were at the football game. 18 teams, he thinks, can go to the Final Four. 12 can win. What that means is no one has been dominant all year. It's been a topsy-turvy year. It's been a topsy-turvy. That's why we don't know. We can pick these brackets, but we have no idea who's going to come out and play the most consistent and who's going to get hot. It really is a year where maybe a 12 seed or a 15 seed or someone not seeded sneaks into the Final Four. That's the beauty of this tournament. I mean, there are a lot of different teams that can get hot and win it.
It's going to be fun, and it all starts tomorrow night. It's going to be Thursday, Friday, Saturday, going on all over the United States. So get out there and check it out if you're around, and join us back here next week on The Net Live for Geeter.
When are we gonna have our show?
It's going to be Monday.
Maybe you,
Jay Hossick, sitting here in the home
okay,
court.
Okay, I have a production meeting. I told you about that.
I know. We'll start at 9. Start at 9. You'll be done by 11.
All right, buddy.
Ready to go. Got to review all this material. You're going to have Men's World Cup to talk about.
Tell people make sure
whatever
to check
else
Volley
you
Talk,
do when I'm not here.
Twitter, and our Facebook page to make sure.
We'll have updates. We'll have updates. We'll have the program for you, and certainly we'll have it on iTunes during the week for your enjoyment. So somebody's going to get to be the champion coming up here in a couple of weeks, and we'll be there. So see you next week. The Net Live, out.
Some people have to learn. Some people wait their turn. Some people have to fight, Some people give their life. They want to hold you back, tell them to off. Whenever they say you can't, take the sea off. I remember when they told me I wouldn't be famous. Now my dream and reality.
That time, we have the people.
This is Eric from 911.
This is Priscilla Lima.
This is Tim Jensen with Pepperdine Volleyball.
The story in real time.
I can't argue that we're the best team in the world.
I'm not retiring, people.
You're listening to The Net Live with Barney.
If everyone was doing a great job, then everyone would win the championship every week.
Geeter.